Hey bosses, before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Nom Nom. Your pet's a member of the family. Don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. Nom Nom delivers fresh dog food with every portion personalized to your dog's needs so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom is made with real whole food you can see and recognize. No additives or fillers that contribute to bloating and low energy. Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real good food for dogs. In fact, they've already delivered over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours, inspiring millions of clean bowls and tail wags. You can check out Nom Nom right now for 50% off. You get a no-risk two-week trial when you go to trynom.com/ilab. That's trynom.com/ilab. trynom.com/ilab. You're going to get 50% off a two-week trial. I'll tell you even more about Nom Nom in a minute. But for now, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Episode 259 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm Derek Spartz here in Los Angeles. I got Johnny on the other end. I can tell by the background, he's in his apartment in Ukraine and he has electricity. Things are looking up in 2023, Johnny.
You know, I came into 2023 with a bang. Actually, 10 bangs.
Uh-oh. Explain.
I was getting ready for my New Year's Eve party. And 6 minutes after 2 p.m., I start hearing rockets, these huge explosions. My windows are shaking, and I'm like, oh, God, this is not good. So I do exactly what I'm not supposed to do. I run out to the balcony to see what's going on.
Well, you got to put it on YouTube, right?
Oh, man. It's on there. And it's like... explosions are going off. Car alarms near me are activated. So it's close by.
I feel bad laughing about this. It's like not real though. I mean, obviously it's real to you. It's just weird being, I guess, in my sheltered little America spot and thinking that that's reality.
You know, honestly, it wasn't that real for me until it was that close. Like I've always read about it or heard about it. But I've never personally been within, you know, shaking range of a missile. And I was like, oh my God, this is not okay. This is scary. Luckily, they were all surface to air missiles. So they were the air defense going up and not the rockets coming down.
Well, that's a good sign. I don't know what to think of this. Is there anything to be believed in what Russia is saying? Because one day they say they want to have talks and then the next day they're sending missiles. It's a confusing situation.
Before, you know, February 24th, 2022, I gave Russia the benefit of the doubt. I was like, you know what? Yeah, maybe they're not so bad after all. Maybe they learned their lessons. You know, maybe they really, you know, are the nice guys again. Now, I mean, after 9 months of the war, I realized you can't trust Russia at all. Like they're like that gaslighting liar that stabs you in the back, you know, like you just can't listen to them.
Yeah. And Ukraine kind of feels like the little like stepbrother, like you don't really belong to the UN and you're not Russia, but Russia wants you. And UN's like, I don't know, do we want you? So it's kind of a weird little like situation that you guys are in right now.
It actually reminds me of high school. I got into a altercation.
I love how you had to think about the term for a second. How should I put this?
Yeah. So basically, I got beat up by like a little mini gang in our school. And there was like a crew of them. You know, this is high school. So at the time, it was scary as crap for me because I was, you know, young. Now looking back, you know, I probably would have handled it differently, but when you're a teenager and there's like a crew of like 12 guys who wait for you after school and beat you up. It's not, it's a very scary situation. And I didn't have that many friends, so I didn't know what to do. I was really stuck. Luckily, there was this guy who was a grade above me, and somehow we were in the same math class, and I would let him cheat off of me. So,
just reinforcing stereotypes here, Johnny.
Yeah. So he liked me, and I was really stressed one day, and he's like, "Hey, what's wrong?" And I said, "Like, I'm getting beat up by these guys." And this guy, you know, he was older, he was a senior, and he had his crew of like 10 guys. So they said, you know, look, we're not going to get directly involved because we don't, you know, it's not our fight and we don't want to get in trouble, but we'll go there and back you up. Go tell that guy, the main guy, I'll fight you one-on-one, and we'll be there so the friends don't jump in. So it could be a fair fight. And this is how I feel like what US is doing to Russia. Or with Ukraine. Ukraine is like is the guy who was getting bullied, right? And Russia was like this, you know, it's like, oh, nobody can stop us. You know, we're bigger, more powerful. We have more ammo. And the U.S. is like, wait. We're not going to get involved directly, but we're going to make sure this little guy, Ukraine, doesn't get his butt kicked. And
we'll teach him some fighting skills and provide some weapons, but that's about as far as we'll go. But yeah, we're there. We're still there.
Yeah. And we'll make sure that Russia, like, you know, fights, you know, relatively fair, you know, right. Doesn't cross too many boundaries, you know, because they know they do that, you know, NATO's going to come in and it really will be a 3-day war.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation. I can't believe you're almost coming up on a year on that now.
Yeah. So let's see what our updates for the end of 2023 are. But hopefully that'll be something we reminisce about. Let's not talk about still.
Yeah, we're always thinking about you, Johnny. Hopefully things will. That's the closest that any kind of missile will come to you in at any time. Let's talk about what we're actually talking about this year. I feel like 2022 was a lot of kind of these catch-ups, what's going on, obviously your Ukraine situation. We delved deeper into more personal subjects. Let's get back to investing. I mean, it was a strange year. I think 2022 is the first year of the podcast where the market in general was actually down for the year. I don't think that's happened since the podcast has started. So it was a really challenging year. I think we need to have a few more episodes to kind of get back into some of these alternative spaces. So this week we're talking to the real asset investor. His name is Dave Zook. I actually found out about him through a Patreon recommendation. If you want to recommend guests to be on the show, I try my hardest to get them on. I apologize. I don't remember the actual patron that did recommend this. I did have it in my notes as a Patreon recommendation though. So whoever you are, I'm sure you know about this.
Yeah, and I think this is actually an interesting topic because there's a lot of programs like this. I don't even know how to describe this investment class. It's not your traditional investment where you're going through a stockbroker or for real estate, even a a fund. This is, I don't want to call it like a private placement, but it's like a alternative investment where there's a type of like business opportunity or something. And they're like, okay, I'm going to invest in this through this company or this guy to do something that otherwise would be complicated for me to get into. So I like the idea of real assets. I've actually met people who have invested in things like car washes before, and I always thought it was a cool idea. So I'm excited to hear what his style is and what his fund does. And then afterwards, let's come back on and talk about if we would invest in something like this, why or why not?
Yeah, so this is a business model that I don't think is necessarily unique because we have seen other people do it. But when you're investing this type of money, you're also investing into the personality. So Johnny, we're going to have you talk to Dave Zook. He's the real asset investor. Let's have you bosses listen to him and see what you think. And then Johnny and I will come back and circle around and see if this is something that we would invest in as well. This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Nom Nom. They deliver fresh dog food with every portion personalized to your dog's specific needs so you can bring out their best. What you feed your dog is just as important as what you put into your own body. It's time for real good food backed by science. Nom Nom features pup-pleasing favorites like chicken cuisine and beef mash. And every Nom Nom meal features high-quality proteins and vegetables mixed with targeted vitamins and minerals to provide the essential nutrition dogs need at every life stage. In fact, Nom Nom's ingredients are cooked individually and then mixed. They're not just thrown into some huge pot and all stirred together. You can see each individual ingredient in every portion of Nom Nom dog food. This gives your dog efficient energy and packs in the vitamins and minerals they need to get the most out of every single bite. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your first order. And I'm also going to give you half off your first order. You'll get a no-risk two-week trial at trynom.com/ilab. That's 50% off your first two-week trial at trynom.com/ilab. One more time, trynom.com/ilab.
All right, Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, Johnny, thanks for having me on your show. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited. So first big question is why real assets versus kind of more traditional stocks or real estate, kind of the bread and butter?
Oh, my goodness. That could be the entire show right there. But okay. I mean, so from a just a 1 minute version, you are, number one, you're operating outside of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. You've got more control of your own money. You're closer to the asset. And let me give you an example of that. We have a self-storage fund, right? So we buy self-storage assets. You could go to Wall Street and buy a stock that, you know, from a publicly traded REIT that does self-storage. Mm-hmm. The difference is you've got, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different layers of organizations or folks or people scraping fees or different fees that is coming off of that before it gets to you, the investor. And then, you know, you could have a general market crash, correction, you know, just any kind of, you know, some kind of news that would make the general market, slow down, crash, correct, whatever. And you would be most likely be negatively affected. It doesn't matter if your asset is doing just fine. It doesn't matter if the income is from your asset went up the month before. You're subject to whatever the market's feeling. And so what I usually say is our fund, which gives you access to the same sort of product, gets you next in line. Like, you're as close to that product as you possibly could be without actually owning it yourself. You have the asset. You have the management team, and then it's you. So there's only one group between you and the actual asset. You can own that asset yourself, then you have to manage it and take care of it and do all the stuff that we do. But it gets you closer to the asset than investing through a publicly traded REIT.
Okay, it definitely makes sense. Speaking of real assets, I think the three that you guys focus on a lot, self-storage, the ATMs, and the car washes. Why do you guys like these three as opposed to, like, for example, a restaurant or a nightclub or some, or coffee shop?
A couple reasons. I started really becoming interested in self-storage in 2017 when we first entered the space. Actually, I had been interested prior to that, but didn't really have a good entry point, didn't have a great team, wasn't too connected in the space. I was busy doing a lot of other stuff. But I recognized in my research that self-storage was very recession resistant as an asset class, you know, meaning that when there was disruption in the market, when there was a market decline, that seemed to be the asset class that did really well. And then, you know, looking where we were in the market cycle, you know, 2008 to 2017, just a really nice bull run. And it just felt to me like we had more potential to take some form of a correction rather than just keep on this, you know, bull market run. And, you know, obviously we had a situation in 2020, 2021, we had COVID, and you got a chance to see, okay, how does this thing perform? How's this asset class perform during those kinds of situations? We saw how they performed in 2008 to 2011, and it was one of the best performing, or the best performing real estate, commercial real estate asset class amongst all of its peers, and how it performed. Just really being able to kind of identify some of those things, some of those, you know, opportunities. Same way with car wash. I mean, today's market, it's really hard to buy a stabilized asset that makes sense from a cash flow perspective, from a, you know, appreciation perspective. You know, you just really, in this last year or so, you know, it's at its all time highs. You know, doesn't mean it couldn't go higher, but you know, it's hard to find an asset class that really performs for you and gives you the cash flow that you want it, you know, that you get in there for. And so getting in there and creating value, forcing value, the self-storage facilities that we're buying, you know, we're adding climate controlled units. We're adding size and scale to it. Same way with car wash. We're buying a piece of dirt and we're building a car wash on, then wrapping a business, you know, putting a business on that piece of dirt. That's how you get value in today's market, I believe.
Yeah, I like it. Actually, we had a previous guest, Kevin Shi, who has self-storage in Hong Kong, and we like it as an asset class. I can see why having a self-storage REIT isn't necessarily the best idea. You get more liquidity, but you pay for that liquidity as well. For the ATMs, I'm assuming these ATMs are not, you know, connected to like Chase Bank or like Bank of America. These are probably ones in, you know, places that, you know, can charge higher fees. I'm assuming maybe like a strip club or amusement park, or where do you guys normally have these ATMs?
So the really good, I mean, the locations that we focus on is high foot traffic delis, chain stores, Walgreens, CVS's, bodegas in New York City. You know, just, you know, high. Number one, you got to find out where your clients are. Number one, well, no, let me back up a little bit further. Number one, you got to figure out who your clients are, right? You got to figure out who your clients are, who's your user, who's using the ATMs. Then number two, you got to find out where they are. You know, you got to find out where that population of users are, where they live, where they congregate, where they shop, where they eat, where they go to pick up their groceries, whatever. So we're in those locations that I just mentioned primarily. And that's done really well for us. And I mean, you know, going through the spring, summer of 2020 and into 2021, you know, it's one of the things that kept us from really suffering from kind of the downtrend or the enclosures in some point of some of our peers who are in, you know, restaurants and nightclubs and bars. And well, you can imagine what happened to that business in, in 2020. Those places got shut down. Almost all of our businesses were deemed essential where our ATMs were at. So location is important. Finding out who your customer is, finding out where they go, where they shop. I mean, that's super important.
Yeah, I like it. And actually, out here in Europe where I live, there's a brand called Euronet, which is everywhere. And they are notorious for charging high fees and giving terrible conversion rates. But they're definitely very, very profitable as well. So I can see that it works.
Yeah, and you know, the not only is the location important, it's you know, knowing how your customer reacts or how, you know, how your customer's habit is formed. You know, I mean, think about 10, 15 years ago, your typical warehouse or factory employee or service employee got a check. Every Friday night, every other Friday night, they'd go to the bank and they'd take some cash out. They deposit the check, take some cash out. Now you don't get a check. That money gets deposited into your account automatically. And now if you want cash, you walk to the corner deli. You walk out of your C-class apartment building. You get the cash that you need for the next week or two. That's how people operate in today's world. And you know, our customer is, our ATM customer is the lower income. It's the immigrant. It's a EBT card carrier. They're on welfare. They bring that card over and they get cash. They, you know, that's our customer. And when you look at where the growth is in this country, it's that customer. That's one of the fastest growing demographics in our country.
Yep, makes sense. So I think you had mentioned you guys were either looking into or had launched some BATMs, some Bitcoin ATMs. Have those worked out? And with the kind of collapse, the crypto exchanges and the prices dropping, has that affected it at all?
So we had some of our highest performing BTMs, months over the last 4, 5, 6 months. We're not impacted by the price point of a certain cryptocurrency. We provide a service and we get a fee for that service. We get a transaction fee. So some of our best performing months wasn't when crypto and Bitcoin was up at 69,000. It was when it was 16 to 20,000. And so, yeah, we're a fee-based company. We charge a fee for the service that's provided, and we did really well throughout that. So in answer to your question, no, we're not subject to the volatility in the price of that coin, crypto, Bitcoin, whatever it is. We get paid for a service.
That definitely makes sense. So Derek, the co-host of this podcast, he has read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and he saw that you were actually mentored by, I don't know, Robert Kiyosaki directly or his team. How was that experience?
Yeah, so I first met him. I actually hunted Robert Kiyosaki down in 2012 and went on the Real Estate Guys Summit at Sea, primarily because him and his team were on board. And I wanted to spend some time with him. He made some statements as his CPA did. Well, one of the statements Robert Kiyosaki made was, you can make millions of dollars a year and pay no tax legally. And I was like, that drove me crazy, because that wasn't me. I was paying $500,000 a year in tax, making a lot of money, but I was a tax slave. His CPA made the statement that if you want to change your tax, you got to change your facts, meaning you got to change the way you do life, you got to change the way you do business, you got to change the way you invest. And that impacted me. And so I need to get around these guys. And so, yeah, I've had quite a few conversations with him, with Robert personally. Tom Wheelwright, his CPA, is a friend of mine now, have had dinner with Robert a number of times. And so, yeah, I was greatly impacted by not only Robert, but Tom and Kenny and, some of his team. That I learned a ton. And yeah, they were my mentors and still are. They were my mentors coming out of kind of that conventional era that I was in. I was thinking inside the box like everybody else, and they kind of shattered that paradigm, that conventional thinking I had.
That's amazing. How did you go from paying that much tax to now, essentially we're nearly zero?
I changed my facts. Yeah, I started doing business differently. I started investing differently. Back in the day when I was paying that tax, I was just head down doing business, get a lot of work done, making a lot of money. Today it's much more strategic. I think about the investments that I make. The tax piece of that, it's already baked in the cake. I look at, I taught some sessions on this where I teach people to take their income column, whether it's ordinary income or passive income or capital gains, put them in buckets or column. And then you find an asset class that will wipe out the tax liability on that specific kind of income. And so that's really all I did. I learned how to invest. It gave me the appreciation to offset the tax liability on the different incomes that I had.
Okay. So I'm sure this could be a whole podcast or a whole book, but I guess just real quick, for like a physical asset, like an ATM or a car wash, like what are some ways to actually reduce the tax on that?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give you an example. So ATMs right now, this year yet, you can get 100% bonus depreciation when you make an investment into their ATM fund. So you invest $100,000, you get $100,000 loss shows up on your K-1 year one. And so really what that does is it reduces your taxable income. You got to make sure that the kind of income that you're making aligns with the asset class that you're investing in, but it reduces your taxable income dollar for dollar. You make whatever, you make 500 grand, you make $100,000 investment into an ATM, it reduces your income by 100 grand. Now you pay tax on 400. Where it really gets powerful is when you start knocking down those top tier tax bracket. You take care of the 37% and the 34% and the 28%, you get yourself down into the, low teens, high teens, even better, single digits. If you want to get really strategic, and live in my world, you can get it down into the low single digits consistently. But it's, you know, it's it, you know, to get into that realm, that's takes some advanced strategies, and you don't learn it all the first year. This is a lifelong learning process. We're always learning. But we got great, people around us too. We got a great team.
So speaking of taxes, one of our Patreons, Chris Young, when we said you were coming on the show, he said your fund sounds interesting, but when dealing with investments spread across multiple states, tax filings can become complicated and expensive. Do you have to file multiple K-1s? Because that gets expensive real quick.
Yeah. So we had a situation a couple years ago where the fund was growing quickly. The fund was growing really fast, and it got bigger than what we had originally intended it to be through, because of a couple mergers and acquisitions. And we ended up having, I don't know, 20 some states in our fund. And that created a problem, because in the states that have state tax, which most of them do, Texas and Florida and Tennessee, and some of those don't, but in the states that you have exposure to, the states that collect sales tax, state sales tax, you had to file a return in that state. Now, it normally didn't happen in the first couple of years because you're showing a loss in those first, in that first period. So you're not showing income, you know, right up front. But eventually, you know, that became a problem that was obvious. So we changed up our business model a bit and made it so that if you came into the fund, you only had exposure to, you know, seven states was the max that you would have exposure to in that fund. So it was a learning curve, and it happened because of growth in the fund and some mergers and acquisitions, which was good for everybody, but at the same time it created kind of a burden on the state tax side.
Okay, makes sense. So nowadays maximum someone would get 7 K-1s, but maybe less because some states don't issue them.
Correct.
Okay.
We found a way to mitigate and offset that burden for our investors and kind of minimize that.
Okay, that's good news. Another one of our Patreons, Tom Conal, asks, he's been looking into buying a car wash in Australia. Are your funds open to foreign investors, so non-US citizens?
So the answer is we can take foreign investor capital. The only thing I would say on their side, it's important for them to know that, you know, they could be subject to double taxation on the U.S. side, taxation on the other side of the pond. So just, you know, if you've got international capital coming in, or if you have an international investor, I would just say, if you're a syndicator, just make sure that they're aware of that and make sure that their tax team is on it and setting them up and putting them in a good position.
Okay, great. And Tom also mentions he listens to Cody Sanchez, which is a previous guest of iLab, and she is anti-ATM. Any idea why?
I have no idea. I can tell you our investors who've been investing in ATMs for the last 11 years are not anti-ATM. They're big ATM fans. And, you know, maybe it's one of those things where maybe that person doesn't understand it. Maybe they don't understand the business model or who the customer is or the demographic. I don't know, but I would be happy to have a conversation. If somebody has a mindset that this is not a good investment, I'd love to hear why and have that conversation, because it's been a very good, solid asset class, not only for us over the last 11 years, but if you look back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, I mean, this has been a really good asset class. It's a good recession-resistant asset class, gives you lots of consistent cash flow when you got them in the right location. And that's important. You know, when you talk about real estate, what's the three most important things in real estate? Location, 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 right? Well, this is a real estate play. You know, we're using an ATM as a vehicle to monetize that piece of real estate. So it's a real estate play. So location becomes very important. So it's, you know, from a cash flow perspective, a recession resistant perspective, a depreciation, a tax impact perspective, it's a great investment.
I can definitely see it working, because I personally had met people in Europe who, when I asked them why they had a Euronet ATM taking up half their storefront and making their store, you know, less attractive for customers. They told me that they actually make more money just from the ATM that with them, they did some kind of revenue split than he did actually selling products in a store, just because he had such a high foot traffic area.
Yeah, no. And it provides a valuable service to that demographic. Yeah. You know, there's many of us, and probably including most of your listeners, who don't use ATMs, don't, you know, I don't use ATM. I own hundreds of ATMs personally. I couldn't get cash out of an ATM if I tried. So it's not for our demographic. It's for a certain group in the US, and that group is growing at a fast rate, one of the fastest in the country.
Yeah, I definitely don't like paying those crazy high fees, so I avoid it, but I can see other people falling for it. But the problem with that is, I guess, one potential downside is, you know, regulation coming in saying, you know, what if tomorrow that they make a law saying these are predatory fees aimed at lower income population? You know, you have to stop charging it. What would happen then to your network that you've built up or your fund?
So, yeah, so we don't see anything like that. There's been nothing like that brewing in legislation. Some of that, you know, those things take time. There's not even been any kind, to my knowledge, there's not even been any kind of you know, conversation around that. I mean, when you think about a $2 or $3 fee for that service, you know, yeah, if you're pulling out $10 bill, that's a nice big chunk out of that $10 bill. When you're pulling $300 or $500 out of the machine, it's like, okay, it's a rounding error. So, you know, we don't believe it's predatory. We believe it's a fair value for the value we bring to that group of folks. And so it really depends on how you look at it. Do you see it as predatory? Okay, tell me why. You know, okay, so let me ask you a question. You live in a C-class apartment building. You have the opportunity, the flexibility to walk outside of your apartment building, walk across the street to the corner deli, and take out $150 out of the ATM machine. And you pay $3 for that service. Or you got to get in your car, you got to fight traffic, you got to drive 3 miles down to the branch, you got to go in the branch, get your cash out, come back. Would you rather pay the $3 or go through that?
Yeah, some people don't even have a car, so they'd have to spend an hour taking a bus. So I understand. I mean, this is why, you know, milk costs, you know, $3 at the deli and $2 at the supermarket.
Sure.
So I could see why it works and see why it makes money. So your fund sounds very interesting. How do you guys make money from it? Is it a fee? Is it a percentage?
Yeah, so normally, and this is pretty broad, but you know, the general idea is there's one revenue source. You know, that's the transaction. That's the transaction that happened. That's a surcharge from that transaction. So let's just call it $3. Then there's three parties that get a piece of that. You get the investor gets about roughly 30%. You get the location owner, you know, the deli, the CVS, the Walgreens, whatever. They get roughly 30%. And these percentages vary a lot. I'm just giving you the kind of the broad overview. And then the management company gets around 40%. And that management fee is inclusive of all the costs, the maintenance, the management, the, you know, having Brinks and Loomis bring your money out and keeping your machine stocked. I mean, all the costs flow back to the management company. So that's generally about what you would see, 30, 30, 40 or something like that. But it's a three-way split.
Okay, definitely makes sense. So what about, for example, your car wash fund? If somebody wanted to invest, is there a minimum? How much of that goes into the car wash? How much of it goes into fees?
Yeah, so it's $100,000 minimum for accredited, available to accredited investors. What we did is got a little bit creative with this fund in that we sat around at the very beginning when we got into this space going on 3 years ago. We said, this is a new asset class for us. We're teaming up with a new operations team. They were new, not new to the industry, but they were new to us. There's development in this fund, quite a lot of development in this fund. Those are all three potential risks, like real risks. How do we offset or mitigate the risk for our investors. And then so what we did is, instead of going with the typical syndication model that you see a lot, 70-30 split, 70% of the cash flow going to the investors, 30% going to the sponsor, the investor gets a whatever 7% preferred return. It might go to 50-50 after you hit a certain IRR waterfall model, whatever. We said, what if we scrap all of that and gave 100% of the revenue to the investor? So we've done pretty well in the last decade. And, you know, we got ourselves and I got myself in a position where I don't need the cash flow. So I was like, not only don't I need the cash flow, I can afford to pay the setup costs and I can afford to carry the admin, the fund management, all that stuff out of pocket. But if I give 100% of the cash flow to the investor, that will reduce their risk. In exchange for that, when they get to 1.75x, or when you invest $100,000, you get $175 back. When they get to that point, then I make money and they exit. So we're projecting that you get to the 1.75x in 5 years or less. And, you know, it could be a good bit less than 5 years, because we're seeing a lot of private equity and institutional appetite for this asset class. Most likely, we'll get bought out between year three and year five. We're on course to have 60 of these Tommy's Express car washes built in the next 3 to 4 years. So we could get bought out. It doesn't matter if we get bought out early, the investor still gets their 1.75x before I get a dime. And then I get paid on the back end. If there's upside when we sell, when, you know, or if we pay them out, we still own the asset after they get their 1.75x. Then I start getting paid.
And then how much is that?
Whatever, I get paid from operations. So they get paid from operations. And then after they're out, then we get 100%. So after they get to the 1.75x, they exit. And then okay. We get whatever operations deliver this.
Okay. So the maximum upside for the investor is 1.75x.
Yes.
Okay.
And we project that it would get, the investors would get to that point in 5 years or less, mm-hmm. and they get 100% bonus depreciation along with that they never have to recapture. So that's kind of a big deal, because not only is it 1.75x, when you do that math, now it becomes an approximate double in 5 years or less.
Can you explain that? How does that work?
All right, I'll back up a second. So there's something that's unique with car washes and gas station, and that is, the building can be depreciated as if it were equipment. Okay, so you can take your equipment, you can write that off, take the 100% bonus depreciation in year one. You can do that with a car wash as well. Not only the equipment, but you can do that with the building. So very aggressive on the tax side. Equipment in the eyes of the IRS has a very limited lifetime, so it depreciates down to zero. So what that means is, when you get to your 1.75x and you exit, you don't have to recapture that. You collected the premium. You've harvested the tax deductions. You've gotten the tax impact. At the end of the day, when you get to that 1.75x, there is no recapture. Not like when you invest $100,000 in an apartment building and then you sell it in 5 years. Now you got to recapture that depreciation that you claim. It's not like that in the car wash space, or it's not like that in our fund.
Okay, so let's say I invested $100,000 that year. I can write off $100,000 in depreciation on my taxes, so therefore saving me a bunch of tax money.
Sure.
Within 5 years, hopefully less, I get a check for $175,000 in total, kind of, you know, in chunks. That money now is just taxable as capital gains or like a K-1 tax bet.
Regular passive income, yeah.
Regular income. So then that $100,000 in depreciation that I took the first year, I don't have to worry about that again.
Yeah. So the way that would look, let's assume you're a high tax bracket taxpayer, like most of mm-hmm. our investors are, and let's say you're in that 40% tax bracket. So now you invest $100,000, you get 100% bonus depreciation in the first 2 years, not in the first year, because we got mm-hmm. some development going on. And when you take 100% bonus depreciation, you got to have your equipment, your building, mm-hmm. you got to be in service by 12/31 of that year. Mm-hmm. So we're getting 100% bonus depreciation over 2 years. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that's $40,000. Let's say you're in a 40% tax bracket, it's $40,000. So now you take your 175, you take your $175,000 on your $100,000 investment, you add the 40, because that you really got to treat that as cash when you don't have to recapture it. Again, it's different when you're doing apartment building, self-storage, whatever. But now you got to count that because you never recapture that. So you add the 175 and the 40 gets you to 215. So now you know, 2.15 in 5 years or less.
Okay. Well, sounds very interesting. If somebody wants to check out your funds or learn more, where can they go?
So our website is therealassetinvestor.com. And I'll give you an email that'll take you directly to the team. You're going to get the best service when you go to this one because you got access to everybody in the team. info@therealassetinvestor.com. And if you have a question on any one of these, if you're a listener who doesn't like ATMs, wants to engage us and have a conversation, love that. If they want information on any one of the asset classes that we're involved in, just send an email to info@therealassetinvestor.com and we'll engage them.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great interview, Johnny. I appreciate you taking that. Talking to Dave on this, he talked about three main subjects: self-storage, which we've covered quite a bit on the show, ATMs, and car washes. I like all three. I do have an issue with one of them, which I think I'll bring up in a little bit. But what are some of your initial thoughts about investing in these assets?
So the assets itself, I've always been very fascinated in. I think it's a very lucrative business. Like whenever I see, you know, these ATMs that are privately owned, whether it's the Euronet kind of ripoff ones in Europe, or the ones I've used at strip clubs that charge you a $9 fee, I can see why it works. And I also see why people like convenience, especially nowadays where things are mostly cashless. It's actually ironic that people like need ATMs more often because they carry cash less often. So in the kind of random times they do need cash, they don't have it on them. So they have to go out of their way and be like, okay, what's close by that can just grab $20 or $40?
I'm glad that you brought that up too, because I've used those Euronet machines. I know exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes, at least like if you're at an airport or wherever you are, you can't avoid it. If you really need cash, you got to pay those fees. And I'm glad you called them out on that. Because I listened to another interview with him that I don't remember the podcast offhand, but they basically just praised everything that Dave had to say. And I like almost everything that Dave had to say. And you kind of alluded that this is kind of maybe not necessarily predatory, but he made it pretty clear that he's going after low income people that need $20, $40, whatever it may be. And I've been that broke. If you're paying a $2, $4, $5 fee just to get $20 out because that's all you have in your account, that sucks. Honestly, it sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. And I don't know. It's hard. I mean, as far as the actual assets, like I like them. You know, I can see why they make money. You know, predatory or not, I can see why they make money. Like, I mean, to be honest, if I can start a payday loan, you know, center and get, you know, 50% interest, I would look into it. Like, but you know, I think that these I don't know the ATM model, like I don't know enough about it for me to personally, you know, want to invest and start one ATM, you know, have a deal with a store or something and put my own ATM in there. I think this is something that you need to scale, which is why Euronet does so well. It's because they're a big brand. They have they have scale. And this is what's the appeal of a fund like Mr. Zooks, is it's scalable and has something behind it. So the actual assets itself, I actually like it. What I don't like is the split.
So let's go over that split. He said, let's say there's a $3 fee on an ATM. Essentially, $1 of that is going back to the store or retail location, wherever it's located, CVS, Walgreens, the bodega, whatever that may be. Another dollar is going to maintain it. You know, Brinks has to come put money in it. If it breaks down, they need to send a tech. And the remaining goes to the investor. So it's about a 1/3 split. All around.
But that's not forever, right? I'm assuming that also caps out like his other investments at 175%.
That's the interesting part here. I don't think I've ever seen a fund split like this where he caps you out at essentially making 75% profit. And then from there on, he says, I'm going to take over the business and it's 100% mine.
Yeah. Like that's the main part where I wouldn't invest, because I'm putting all the risk by putting my money in. And if in the best case scenario, I get my money back and 75% more, like, that's not worth it for me. Like, on an unsecured business where, like, I don't know what's going to happen with this money. And yeah, making 75% over 5 years is decent. You know, it's 15% a year. It's pretty good. But having no upside potential above that and having 100% downside potential, that's not something I would do.
Yeah. So I guess the way to look at it is you're not going to have that giant home run exit, but at the same time, he's not seeing anything until that 1.75 hits. So he's banking on himself that he can grow it to that level. And it sounds like he's very confident that'll happen within 5 years. So if you're looking at a 15% return per year, it sounds pretty good, especially when you add the tax benefits in there of the, let's say you invested $100,000, you'd essentially get $100,000 in the first 2 years of tax write-offs. So that 175, he's saying if you're in the top tax bracket at 40%, you're essentially seeing 215. So you're doubling your money in 5 years if everything goes as planned.
Yeah, so that's the one reason why I can see someone investing, if that was a way to actually get that tax write-off and there wasn't another way to get that tax write-off. At the same time, I would never invest in something just for tax write-off. I remember, I don't want to call him out, but let's say a stupid person I know, he had a bunch of like these no name supplements at his house. It's like powdery supplements, and I'm like, why do you have so many? And he was like, oh, I signed up for this multi-level marketing thing. And I was like, why? And he's like, don't worry, I get all the money back in tax break. And I was like, while that may or may not be true, you could have put that money into an actual business or anything else and had the same tax break. Like, you don't need to just throw your money away to some MLM scam. Lo and behold, 2-3 years into it, of him paying like hundreds of dollars every month into this pyramid scheme, never selling a single product, having a bunch of useless vitamins, stack up in his house, the IRS audits him and says, you can't write off something that's never made money.
Yeah. I think you get like 3 years, I think. If you haven't made money by 3 years, then the IRS is like, okay, this is not a real business.
I think it's 2 years.
Is and it
I
two?
Think,
okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure with like network marketing, like they're even harder on that, because they know that, 99% of people never make money from it anyway. So yeah, it's stupid. And then like you kind of just got, you just destroyed your chances of starting an actual business or investing in something else. So I don't know. I would say talk to your CPA or your tax guy before you make this investment and see, if this would actually be a tax write-off, how much it would be for. And if you have taken that money and put it into a different investment or somewhere else, if you would get a similar tax write-off. Because if you do, then there's no specific reason why you should invest in this.
Yeah, these deductions are not exclusive to a car wash or an ATM or whatever it may be. I think there's quite a few different asset classes you could apply those to. I did find it interesting, though, that you can deduct a lot more from a car wash or a gas station just because of the way it's zoned as a business. I was looking up this Tommy's Express Car Wash, because that's where his fund is. It's like a franchise quick car wash place where you can get a membership, I think for like $30 or $40 a month. You can have unlimited washes. And he said the average cost is like $1 a wash, which sounds crazy cheap to me. So assuming that the person doesn't get a wash every single day, there's probably someone out there that does, but I'm sure that's the vast minority. You're automatically profitable by using this subscription model. And I think that's really smart of them to focus on the subscription model. I actually looked up their locations. They have 137 locations across the US right now. There's actually a few in California. They're pretty far out of LA, maybe like an hour, but there are a few out here. I've just never heard of this brand, but looking at the map, they got spots all over the US.
Yeah, I mean, that actually, as a business, is something I would use as a customer if it was on my way back, from my daily commute, because it sounds like a cool model, assuming that the lines don't get super long or, it actually works well, because I do like having a clean car. So that sounds like it could be good. And obviously, he wants to invest in businesses that will actually make money, because for him to get paid, it needs to have that 75% return first for him to start getting money from it. But it does sound like a very convenient way for him to have a lot of upside potential going forward after those, couple years or 5 years. So I respect that he's in it for the long run, and that it sounds like these are, trying to be legitimate businesses. I just, I put it in the same category as a building developer or apartment developer that has these big dreams and ambitions of becoming, very profitable, but they don't really have any skin in the game. Like all the money, all the risk is coming from someone else. And if it doesn't work out, oh well.
That's a solid point. And I guess, in 100% of everything after he pays you out is all coming back to him. It is an interesting model. I will attest to having the clean car thing. I just bought a new car last week. Johnny, it's rained, I think I've had it 7 days. It's rained 5 out of the 7 days. So I have this brand new car and I'm just staring at it dirty and I don't want to wash it because it's just going to rain the next day.
Well, if you had an unlimited Tommy's Car Wash subscription, you wouldn't mind.
And I would use it every day. I'm like, I'm getting my money's worth. Can we talk about one thing that I did not like at all? And it has nothing to do with Dave. It's his customers of it. The Bitcoin ATM. Who is the person using the Bitcoin ATM?
I mean, it is actually useful if you happen to have, you already have Bitcoin and you want to take out some cash and you don't want to go through like a person, that you have to like talk to on Telegram and meet somewhere. So I can see that being a thing. I just think that the use case is so small. Like so few people actually own Bitcoin and so few people have a way to actually, have it on like a wallet or something where they can actually go use a Bitcoin ATM. I'll tell you my experience with them. I've seen a lot of Bitcoin ATMs. I've seen them in Chiang Mai. I've seen them in like a couple of different cities or countries. They have never worked. They've always been out of order.
Really? I've seen them. I've never seen anyone on them. And just it defeats the whole purpose of Bitcoin. If you really believe in Bitcoin, then why are you using an ATM? I think it's for people that don't understand Bitcoin.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it just sounds like something that should exist. And I don't know. Like, for example, in is it Venezuela that they decided to use Bitcoin?
No. Not Venezuela. Hold on. It was a country in South America. El Salvador.
Yeah. So in El Salvador, I don't know. I guess they wouldn't even need to convert into cash because then they're supposed to just pay, with it online. But in general, like the idea of Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency actually being usable in everyday life has been an idea for the last, 5 years or so. And I kept thinking, it's kind of new. Maybe they just need to, get the Lightning Network to work or get these Bitcoin ATMs to work or get whatever to work. It's been like 5 years. Like they still can't do it.
I sold all my crypto. I mentioned it a couple episodes back at the end of the year, and I had planned to buy back in Bitcoin, and I'm not. I'm just over it. And another thing, this morning, on my way here, I was checking my email, and I got an email from PayPal. I think my account got hacked. It says you got charged $619.99 to pay for a company called Bitcoin Crypto. That wasn't me. So I'm just one more strike against Bitcoin. I'm over it. I'm so over it.
Oh, that's funny. Well, let's see at the end of 2023 what our thoughts are on that. But on this investment, are you going to or would you invest in Dave Zook's fund?
Well, first of all, I can't because I'm not an accredited investor. And the $100,000 threshold is very high. Obviously, if you have the funds, I think I like the car wash one better. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old and having morals, but I just don't like the idea of charging people the ATM fees. And it just feels a little dirty to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't believe it's actually $3. Like I would imagine, like, maybe if it starts at $3 and then goes up to like as much as people would, you know, still be willing to use it, or they start hiding fees in, like transaction fees. Like, that's actually how Euronet gets you. So I've used Euronet a lot of times and I've never actually been screwed by them. It's because I'm super careful. I click, you know, no, refuse conversion, use local currency. But the thing is, they keep moving it around and they change the language.
Right.
And they make you do it like multiple times. Then they'll say, are you sure? You know, like, it really kind of just screw with you. And imagine if you're not a seasoned traveler or you almost press the wrong button or something, you can get charged a conversion fee where they just give you a really terrible exchange rate. So if you're taking out $800, it'll be at least $50 in fees.
$50 on 800?
Yeah.
Oof.
That's insane, right?
Yeah, I see some of those little independent ones. So I live in a very touristy area at Venice Beach. A lot of foreigners, a lot of European tourists. And there's those junky little ATMs that are just like run off like an extension cord out of all the little vendors. And those fees are, yeah, like $5 to $10. And then I can imagine if you're a foreign tourist, wherever you're pulling that money from, it's doing the conversion rate, which is probably grabbing you on that. And whatever bank over there is charging you, those fees would get out of control really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. So the business model itself, you know, it's not my my favorite. I understand if it makes money, it makes money, you know, and that's not up to me to regulate. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. Like, if I was a corner store and someone came in and said, hey, can we rent this spot in your corner? We'll give you a third of all the fees. I might say yes, right? Especially if sometimes the money that you get from that is actually higher than you would have made actually running your business. It's crazy, depending on how high traffic your area is. As an investment, if I was going to do it, I would rather just do it on my own, if there was some way to do it. And for the ATM, you know, as I said before, it'd be hard to scale. So I you know, obviously wouldn't have a way to do it, unless I was on the receiving end of renting out the spot. But for something like the car wash, if Tommy's had like a actual franchise model where you can just invest directly with them to open a Tommy's franchise, that's something I would actually look into. But going through the fund without the upside potential past 175%, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at Tommy's website, and they actually do have a franchise button where you can go through there, and there's a lot of good information in there. Dave's site, therealassetinvestor.com, there's not a ton of information, and there's no numbers on returns or anything like that. So if you're going to invest in something like this, definitely ask for all that. I'm looking at the requirements for a Tommy's car wash. If you want to open up one, Johnny, you need to have a net worth of $2 million, and you need to have $1.5 million liquid if you want to actually fully own it. If you want to lease it, you need to have a net worth of 1.5 and a liquid of 1 million.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm out of that.
Franchise fee is $50,000 a year, no matter how much you sell, and 4% royalty and 1% towards national brand, which I would assume is advertising. So 50,000 plus 5%.
Okay. I don't know how much a car wash would be normally, but that sounds doable.
It says, what does it say? Their gross sales, median gross sales are $3.1 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that doing well. Like, I'd rather open that than a Subway. I say that.
Yeah, for sure. Subway is trash.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting if you're using it for the tax play. Obviously, talk to your accountant and see if everything Dave is saying is correct and if it applies to you. And ask them for more information. I'll post the email address that Dave left us. You can email them directly. Let them know that you heard them on Invest Like a Boss, and I'm sure they'd provide you with all the information you're looking for and the website, therealassetinvestor.com. Dave, thanks for coming on the show. Johnny, what other business we got? It's a new year.
Well, first off, the Boss Lounge is our free Facebook group. So you can go on there. You can talk about this investment or anything else. And for our Patreons, we now have a new private Discord server. You want to talk about that?
As much as I can. I really don't know how to do it. I set it up, but it's a learning curve. There's a few people in there trying to get it to sync with Patreon. So it should be automatically synced with Patreon. If you are a Patreon and you're at the $5 level, we appreciate that. Nothing's going to change for you. You're still going to get access to all our posts in Patreon. And we've been posting a ton of content in there. We got bonus episodes, all our trades and moves, investments, life changes. Those are all still accessible to you at $5 level. But if you bump it up to the 10 or higher, you get access to this Discord server. And I hope it's just a way for bosses to connect, share ideas, investment ideas, travel ideas. You just got questions for Johnny, Sam, or myself. It should be a good way to communicate and make the community stronger. It's still in development. It is live. Just trying to figure out the tech.
Well, let's see how that goes with something new. It's something we've been putting off for a while, but a couple people have asked for it. So we'll try it out. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a Patreon and you're supporting the show, give us some suggestions. We'll try anything once.
Like I said, this guest, Dave Zook, that we had on today was a Patreon recommendation. So anything you suggest in Patreon, we take everything seriously. Even if it's out of like weird stuff that we probably wouldn't even normally talk about, we're open to new ideas. We got some good show suggestions coming up on the year and excited for what's to come.
Yeah, so go ahead and sign up and troll Derek with some crazy investment ideas. See you guys in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.